Price's Sunday Best, Scousers Abroad.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am really thrilled at this because I'm a great fan of this young man. We've got a great story to tell. It's a Scouser Abroad. He's in America where he's doing so well for himself, and congratulations to him. I met him when he was a young lad. I met him at the stadium in Liverpool, the old boxing stadium, the old stadium where wrestling used to be. I used to sit with Billy Butler and watch Robbie Brookside. Hello, Robbie.
Hello, Peter. How are you, mate?
I'm well. I'm so glad we finally tracked you down. Really, really pleased about that. Really pleased. Well, young man, what a career you've had.
It's, it's like 37 years now this
it's
year.
It's not 37?
I made my debut for Ari Williams at Real Town Hall on 22nd of October, wow. 1981. I was 15, and I wrestled Joe Critchley. And I left Kirkdale, and I had a pound to my name, and I said to my mum, you know, lend us a pound. I've got a match tonight, my first ever match. And my mum and my dad just refused because they hated wrestling. So I got a half peak single to Upton by Chester, and I had to bunk the train from Chester to Bill. And then I got a legger off the guard. The guard collared me underneath the chair. So. But I got there, and that was the start of it, and I'm still here somehow. And it's been like a lifetime of work for the business. But I'm very, very lucky to have had it, and I'm very humbled and happy to have had it as well.
Interesting, you say that. You say you're lucky, but you've worked very hard. I mean, I've kept tabs with your career, and you've worked really hard. Where did the love of wrestling come from? Where was right at the beginning? Where did it come from?
Well, it was. I used to watch it like in Kirkdale. No one ever watched it, you know. It was playing football on a Saturday or going to watch Everton. If I had the odd Saturday off, I'd watch it on a Saturday afternoon. And my dad had come in from he worked for the post office in town, Victoria Street, and he'd have a couple of pints and he'd come in and he hit the wall at me. Get that bloody rubbish off. And like, we used to have an outside toilet, so he'd go to the toilet, and it was the old channels where you used to press it in and you could hear it in the next street, and he'd go, "Hey, I can hear that." So I was intrigued by it, really. But my auntie then came, I guess I was like 12, and she went to stadium, and I never knew, and I begged my mum, could I go? And I went, and That was it, really.
Wow.
I mean, for those people who never went to stadium, when you go to the Echo Arena, with all due respect to the Echo Arena, it's a lovely modern arena, but the stadium had character, and of course it had characters in there.
Oh wow, and just a bit.
Well, I think if I'd have gone to a show in a sports centre or, you know, a lesser hall, it might not have hit me as much as what it did. But by golly, it hit me, and. It hit me so bad that I packed the football in, and to cut a long story short, I ended up getting an invitation, which I thought I was going to a show up on the East Lancs Road at the English Electric, where they used to have a wrestling club, and it wasn't one of these clubs now, like a school where you pay and you go, well, I want to do a suplex. It was like, and it was a fella called Carl McGrath. And I didn't know. My mate had gone up to him at the stadium and said, "See that kid down there? He thinks it's all fixed." And Carl took an exception to that. And my mate came back. He said, "Oh, there's a show up in Kirby on Sunday." So I thought I was going to the show. And the next thing I discovered, I had a neck and a pair of shoulders, because I never really needed my neck and shoulders before. But he stretched me like...
Really?
Even to this day, I've had over 5,500 matches all over the world. That was the most painful moment of my life, because it was just unbelievable. The pain and like he started whacking me and there was. I mean, can you imagine that now? A 40-year-old man hitting a 14-year-old kid.
No, not at all. Yeah.
But you know, like whatever happened then, it happened, and that sparked an appetite and a desire. And I went back, and then they started showing me. You know, the basics. And then I went to Rill. Carl took me to Ari Williams in the summer, and I stayed in Rill for 6 weeks during the school break. and I put rings up and I done second and a timekeeping, and then Eddie Hamill, Johnny Palance, Orig, a fellow called Dave Finch, they get me in the ring before the start of the show, and then, you know, teach me the basics, and that's how it started.
Robbie, it's interesting you say about it was in the papers all the time about fiddling and it was showmanship and all that. And I once on radio, I don't know if you ever heard the story, but I once said, it's fixed, it's fixed. And Kevin, was it Kevin? Kevin
Keneally.
Kevin, yeah, who sadly got passed away. Irish, but lived in Liverpool. Challenged me to the wrestling. I went down for some photos, and I'll never forget it. It was at the stadium, and the photographer went, "These aren't working." Hurt him. Well, Robbie, he destroyed me.
You know, Kevin, I travelled a lot in the Northern shows with Kevin, and he was like a comedy actor.
Yeah.
Comedian, wrestler. And he could, in his day, he could look after himself. I mean, even towards the end of his career, he could, if you got close to him and he got something on you, he'd hurt you. He was from the proper old school.
Yeah.
And I love Kevin because he was the only ever, in the 37 years of my career, he was the only ever wrestler that on those licensed vigilers dues and the big tent gents evening things. Yeah. After his match, which would be a complete riot, they'd give him a microphone and he'd do 30-minute stand-up.
Wow.
And it was just, I wish I had a video of, you know, just those times, because unfortunately there was, you know, it wasn't the way it is now where you can record things on your phone and whatnot. But I'd love that, just to watch it and make me smile, because Kevin was one of the best. And he helped me a lot, you know. When I first started, wrestling there was no front door, there was no back door. It was just a piece of stone. And I had to try and create a hole just to get my finger through, to just touch the other side. And it was hard. I'm coming from Liverpool as well, because there's no wrestlers from Liverpool. It was all Manchester, Wigan, Bradford, Leeds. So that coming from Liverpool at the time, it was like incredibly hard. And I can safely say I had everything thrown at me, both in and out the ring.
Yeah.
But there was no plan B. You know, I had no plan B. So
Robbie, can you explain to us why American wrestling is ginormous? Because it's ridiculous, isn't it?
I think, well, I know that before I got here, I wasn't a WWE fan because I was too busy trying to, you know, put money on the table. So I was traveling the world, and I was doing, you know, and every night I was, you know, getting in the car or whatever I had to get in to get to the show. So I never kept tabs on it. Some of my friends went on to greater things, but it never appealed to me. I came here in the 90s, but since I've worked for WWE, four years ago, 2013, I went to my first WrestleMania. I used to have a school in Leicester, and all the lads and the girls used to come and go, "It's WrestleMania. Oh, my goodness." And I'd go, "Well, it's just a wrestling show." And I went there, and I put my hand up after a day, and I went, "I'm sorry. I didn't think this one through, because it's so big." And I think it's, I work here in Orlando for WWE NXT, and with us, it's the attention to detail that we do. It's the size and the vision of the company. It's just, it boggles you. It really does. You know, we NXT started off as what they call, we create tomorrow's and next week's talent, next week's superstar.
Yeah.
We do that. We've got a state-of-the-art performance center here with 7 rings, and it's just, you go there and you go, "I work here." You know, I've worked here for 5 years. And our success of sending people up, and they've all got on the main roster now, they've all gone on for better things. But it's just the way they do things. They don't think, they think big. I mean, Vince McMahon is, you know, I never see him. You know, I've met him 3 times, and you just never see him because he's that busy. I don't think there's enough seconds in the day for Vince and for my immediate bosses, Triple H. And you just think of his daily... I mean, he has 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning workouts.
So what do you do? What do you do over there? Tell us.
I'm a coach and a producer. We produced the show last night in Cocoa Beach. I get all the newbies. So we go all over the world scouting for athletes. And at the moment, I just sent 8 Chinese to the next level, which was, I came back last year and I thought, wow, I've got 8 Chinese. They don't speak English. How's this going to work? But the company give them English lessons and they're an incredible company to work for. And again, everything's taken care. And that was a great thing for me because just teaching Chinese nationals how to wrestle and the emotion side and the charisma and character side is a totally different thing. I'm lucky that I have that kind of thing in me to be able to teach people because I've always tried to help people. I've always tried to make this job better.
Yeah.
Because, I love it with a passion and it's been everything to me, really, all the way through my life. It's been, so if I can make it better by, whatever way I can. So, I normally go in the mornings. It's like having an office job and still being in the wrestling business. I have to do reports on Matt Book Airs and stuff. I couldn't even spell that when I was in England. But I just do all these reports and it's the big league. It really is. And
Robbie, let me interrupt you there because I want to ask the question. When you teach them wrestling, do you also teach them the show business part of it? Because it is a huge combination, isn't it, of the show business, the booing, the cheering, the booing, the cheering, then the fantastic wrestling moves.
Yeah, I think with the foreign talent who don't know anything about wrestling, I have to teach them why you do something. And I've got 4 Indian lads, an Indian girl, a Jordanian girl, a Kuwaiti lad, a Egyptian lad, an American Ninja Warrior. She's about 5. She was the first one to ever complete the full thing over there. It was incredible. And none of them really have an idea of, what it's all about. So I have to take it back and say, well, this is why we do this. But I always, facial expressions tell you everything. If you're standing at a bus stop and, someone's, smiling at you or pulling, or glaring at you, you can basically tell what's going on. And I think... With your face, it's a big thing, in our business. So telling them to react and show natural emotions, that's a big thing. Of course, we have a thing called the mirror room where it's like a small studio where the talent can go in and they can practice the promos, they can practice being angry, they can practice, and it records you and then you can play it back on your own personal account. And it's everything that Triple H is just such a... He's changed the game with all this. And everything is there.
Yeah.
And everything, all the equipment, we've got the best coaches. We've got strength and conditioning coaches, just unbelievable. And it's there to make you succeed. And if you don't succeed, then you have to look at yourself in the mirror. And I mean, at the moment, we've got 95. We started, I guess, with 60 or something like that, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And the developmental system that we're having is a proven success. And I'm proud. I'm happy.
That's fantastic, Robbie. When did you actually give up wrestling yourself, or do you still wrestle?
No. So it would have been sometime in 2013, and I came over here because William Regal's my best mate. And he kept on saying to me, because I lived in Leicester at the time, and he kept on saying, it's something's going to happen, your name. And I've done a lot of seminars, and I've done a lot of scouting across Europe for WWE. And then it happened, and he said, look, you could come over for 6 months, and then see how you feel, and then take it back to England. Then after 2 months of being out here, they went, would you stay? And I went, yeah. So I think it's my last match. I don't know. It's sometime in the summer of 2013. But I made up with that because I didn't want to go out with a big, you know, a big brass band and trumpets and like heralding my career. And I'd much rather go out the way I came in. It was quite nice. But I had two knee operations, like at the same time. I had a meniscus and a cruciate ligaments left and right. And that kind of, when I couldn't do the things that I could, you know, like switching the lights on, I'd step through the ropes. I could go on with anyone in the world. I can, you know, say that confidently.
Yeah.
But then I picked up these two knee injuries and I was thinking more of my knees rather than the match. And I hated it.
Yeah.
And so I've done a lot more coaching. And then this thing out here came up and 6 months, you know, the tryout and all that, and then this is 5 years now.
Rest is history. Now, do you ever get back to Liverpool? Have you still got family here?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, my sister's got bad health at the moment. She's in Clatterbridge, and my mum's still knocking. You know, she's 86. My mum still lives in Wycombe Street, and I came back for Christmas, and I've got my same group of friends. Still go and watch Everton. I'm coming back because I've got to come back and sort some family things in a couple of weeks. So it's not the sort of ideal thing to come back to, but you know, any chance I get to come home, it's a bargain and it's a bonus.
And but I remember you taking me up to your house to meet your mum once. That was a lifetime away.
I remember it was like. It was like an alternative vision.
It was surreal, wasn't it? It was surreal.
Well, like, you had an XR3, like a convertible, and no one had ever seen one. And you came down the street and everyone came out. It was like King Peter's comes to visit us. it was great.
Going away from the job for a second, do you like living in America? Do you enjoy it?
I love it. I lived in Atlanta when I was in the 90s, I guess it was like 97, 98, and I hated it. I think it was because I worked for the VCW. Just this job, you know, because we still go out on the road. So, like, I was in Cocoa last night. I was in Tampa on Thursday. Going to St. Petersburg on next Friday, Thursday. So I still do the live events and everything else, but just where I live, it's paradise. I live in, like, it's a country club, and it's got a golf course in the middle of it. And I live in I don't know why I've got a three-bedroom. I live on my own, but I've got a three-bedroom, they call them condominiums, whatever. And it's just paradise where I live. I've got a swimming pool outside, but then there's a big clubhouse in the middle. And there's what they call snowbirds. So there's, like, loads of Boston and New York. And there's no one from the wrestling that live here. So kind of really nice that I go off to the clubhouse and there's some Scottish, a couple of Scottish people that come in and there's a Cockney fellow who supports Arsenal, but
you don't talk to him. Listen, before we go, because we could talk forever, and I really will be annoyed when you come home if you don't come up and see us live. I'll really
I'd
be annoyed about that.
I, do you know what? I used to go up there as a kid up the Tower Beacon, and just. Amaze myself, you know, at the thing, and I'd love to.
Good.
I'll be back, and I'll definitely hook you up.
I'll be annoyed if you don't. Now, tell us before we go, Giant Haystacks, Big Daddy. Were they all nice guys? Were they all around? Was it good days?
I can't really talk for Big Daddy. I don't really. I never really knew the guy, but Haystacks was fantastic.
Yeah.
He was. We travelled with him. And we towards the end of his career, because I used to tag with a guy called Doc Dean, who actually lives in Orlando, would you believe?
Oh, right.
And he stayed here in 1998. I went back to Germany. But in the early 90s, we travelled and wrestled with Luke. And we had some screams. He was, like, really funny. And we'd have conversations about food. And, like, he'd go, what did you have for dinner yesterday? And I'd just, my mum did a roast. What did you have? The wife thought of the finest piece of Argentinian beef. and we laughed and laughed. he was and let's not forget ourselves here. Daddy and Aistax were like household names.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
I tell our talent over here how big they were, you know. And Aistax was a lovely fella and a very, very funny fella as well. I treasure those moments in the car, you know. And
great days. Robbie, I'm going to be annoyed if you don't come and see me. It's been great to talk to you. Robbie Brookside, our Scouser Abroad, over in Orlando, who's made so much for himself. He's now one of the big, big guys within WWE. He's the coach, the producer. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you for listening. Thanks, Pete.